Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. Today we're going to be tackling a story that has it all.
Oh.
A talking donkey.
Wow.
A prophet for hire, and even some prophecies that might point to Jesus.
Oh, wow.
We're diving into a lecture by Dr. Ted Hildebrandt all about Balaam and the book of Deuteronomy.
Okay.
And I think this is a story that a lot of people can relate to, at least in one way.
Yeah.
Have you ever been tempted to do something that, you know, isn't really right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially if there's like a big reward involved.
Definitely.
That's kind of the crossroads that Balaam found himself at.
It's fascinating, you know, how this story, even though it's so old, still speaks to these really basic human struggles that I think we all face. Mm. You know, that pull between what we know is right and what we want.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. So let's set the stage here.
Yeah.
Who was this Balaam guy anyway?
Well, Balaam is an interesting figure because his name actually means destroyer. But he was known as a prophet, you know, someone who spoke for God.
Mm.
And what's really fascinating is that he wasn't just any prophet. He actually knew and worshipped Yahweh, the God of Israel.
So he's this prophet who knows the God of Israel, but he gets hired by the Moabites to curse the Israelites. I mean, that's already setting us up for some conflict here.
And it gets even more interesting because we're not talking about like a small incentive here.
Mm-hmm.
The king of Moab offered Balaam his own palace filled with silver and gold just to utter this curse on Israel.
Wow.
So you can imagine the internal turmoil that must have been going on. On the one hand, you've got this promise of wealth and power.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But on the other hand, you've got the possibility of betraying the very God that you claim to serve.
Yeah. I mean, this really gets you thinking about the psychology of temptation. It's really easy to judge Balaam from our perspective, you know, thousands of years later. But who knows how any of us would react, you know,
right,
given that same kind of offer.
Yeah. And that's something that Dr. Hildebrandt really emphasizes, is that this story isn't just about some kind of like black and white, you know, right and wrong kind of decision. But it's about, you know, these little subtle steps that we take that kind of lead us down one path or another.
Hmm.
So, you know, Balaam might have started out really wanting to follow God.
Right.
But as this allure of wealth and status kind of crept in, you can see how his judgment might have become a little bit clouded.
So it's kind of like he got on the slippery slope.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that brings us to one of the most, I think, memorable parts of the story, which is the talking donkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is where the narrative kind of takes this turn towards the absurd, you know.
Right.
But it's also, I think, where we start to see Balaam's blindness to his own predicament.
Yeah. The talking donkey. I mean, what is that all about? What really strikes me is how the donkey, you know, usually we think of a donkey as like a stubborn animal. But in this story, the donkey actually becomes like the voice of reason.
I know it's almost comical that Balaam, who is this supposed prophet, is completely oblivious to the danger, you know,
right,
of this angel of the Lord that's standing right in his path.
Mm-hmm.
But his donkey, this simple creature, you know, can see it
mm.
and even has the audacity to question Balaam.
Yeah.
You know, what? Have I ever done anything like this to you before? The donkey asks.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like the universe itself is trying to, like, shake Balaam awake.
Yeah. It's that whole idea that wisdom can sometimes come from the most unexpected sources, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes the people that we least expect are the ones who can offer these really valuable insights.
Absolutely. And it's such a powerful message, too, about humility.
Yeah.
And being open to, you know, hearing different perspectives.
Absolutely. So despite all this, does Balaam go through with the curse? Does he actually curse the Israelites?
Well, this is where things get really interesting.
Man.
Even though he was hired and, you know, paid very handsomely to curse Israel, Balaam ends up blessing them.
Oh, yeah.
And not just once, he actually blesses them four times. And these aren't just any blessings. These are prophetic oracles.
Wow.
Delivered directly from God.
So God's putting a stop to this curse and making Balaam bless the very people he was supposed to condemn.
Right.
Doesn't this kind of raise some questions, though, about God changing his mind?
It certainly does. And it's something that theologians have debated for centuries.
Yeah.
You know, we see other instances in the Bible where God seems to relent. You know, like when Moses intercedes for the Israelites after that whole golden calf incident.
Right.
So it's not a straightforward answer.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So what about these prophecies that Balaam delivers? I know Dr. Hildebrandt mentioned something about kings in these prophecies.
Yes. And this is where the story takes on this really interesting, potentially messianic dimension.
Okay.
In one of the oracles, God himself is declared the king of Israel. But then in another oracle, it talks about a future human king who will be even greater than Agag, who was this really powerful enemy king.
Mm.
And then in the fourth oracle, Balaam describes a star and a scepter rising out of Jacob, which is imagery that really evokes this idea of powerful leadership and a connection to the lineage of Israel.
Yeah, a star rising out of Jacob. That definitely sounds familiar. It's got some echoes of the Christmas story, you know, the star that led the wise men to Jesus.
It's a fascinating connection. And, you know, when you think about it, the Magi, those wise men that followed the star, they were also from the east, just like Balaam. So could they have been familiar with these ancient prophecies?
Right.
And seen them fulfilled in Jesus?
That's a pretty mind-blowing thought.
It is.
So after all this back and forth,
yeah,
how do we ultimately understand Balaam? Is he a hero? Is he a villain? Or is he somewhere in between?
That is the million-dollar question. On the surface, it looks like Balaam ultimately obeys God by blessing Israel.
Right.
But Dr. Hildebrandt points out this really fascinating detail later in the story. Balaam actually advises the Moabites to try a different tactic, to lead the Israelites into sin.
What? So after all this, after the talking donkey and the divine pronouncements, he's still trying to undermine God's people.
It seems that way. And it really gets at, I think, the heart of Balaam's, you know, tragic flaw. It seems like he never fully let go of that desire for wealth and power.
Yeah.
Even after experiencing God's intervention, he still allowed greed to kind of corrupt his actions.
It's a reminder that even people who have these profound spiritual insights and experiences can still fall prey to temptation.
Absolutely. It's a cautionary tale, I think, for all of us.
Absolutely. And that's something I think that we see echoed throughout the book of Deuteronomy, which we're going to dive into next.
Yeah.
From the talking donkey to the prophecies about kings. I mean, Balaam's story is a wild ride. But now I'm really curious to see how these themes of choice and consequence play out in the book of Deuteronomy.
Me too.
So we're going to take a short break and then come back to unpack this next part of the deep dive.
Sounds good.
All right. So we've left Balaam and his talking donkey behind, at least for now. But his story really sets the stage for some of the big themes that we see in Deuteronomy.
That struggle that he faced, you know, that tension between like personal gain and obedience to God is something that runs all throughout Deuteronomy.
Yeah. One thing that really struck me about Deuteronomy is how much it emphasizes the promised land. Yeah. It's almost as if the land itself has like a deeper meaning beyond just like, you know, the physical territory.
Right. It wasn't just about, you know, physical boundaries or, you know, a place to live. For the Israelites, the promised land represented this incredible fulfillment of God's promises to them. It was a place of belonging, security, and abundance after all those years wandering in the wilderness.
Right. So it's almost like a physical manifestation of that covenant with God.
Exactly. And Dr. Hildebrandt really highlights this idea that the land was a gift, something totally unearned. And that's crucial to understanding Deuteronomy. You know, it wasn't something they deserved or something they earned through their efforts. It was an act of grace, a testament to God's faithfulness to his promises.
Yeah, that makes me think about how we often view success or achievement today.
Yeah.
We really tend to emphasize hard work and merit.
Right. But sometimes we forget the role of grace. You know, the things that we've been given that we haven't necessarily earned.
It's a great point, and it's a good reminder for us to cultivate gratitude, you know, for the blessings that we have in our lives and to recognize that sometimes the most important things are actually gifts, you know, freely given.
Absolutely. But alongside this emphasis on the gift of the land, there's also this constant reminder to remember the past.
Yeah.
You know, that whole remember you were slaves in Egypt thing.
Right. That's a recurring theme throughout Deuteronomy. God keeps commanding them to remember their history. Not necessarily to dwell on it, but to acknowledge his deliverance and to avoid repeating the mistakes that led them into slavery in the first place.
It's interesting because it seems like remembering could be both a blessing and a curse, you know?
Yeah.
It can inspire gratitude, but it can also kind of keep you stuck in the past. How do we reconcile those two things? That's such a good question. And Dr. Hildebrandt suggests that remembering in the context of Deuteronomy is all about learning from experience.
Okay.
It's about acknowledging both the good and the bad,
yeah,
you know, both the triumphs and the failures, and allowing those memories to shape who we are and how we live.
So it's not about clinging to the past, but about integrating it into like our present and our future.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in the case of the Israelites, remembering their slavery was a reminder that they needed God.
Right.
You know, it was a way for them to stay humble and to recognize that their freedom and their prosperity ultimately depended on him.
So how does this all connect to the idea of covenant renewal that we talked about earlier?
Well, Deuteronomy can be seen as this kind of rearticulation of the covenant that God made with Israel back in Mount Sinai.
Okay.
It's about reminding them of their obligations under that covenant, you know, to love God, to obey his commands, and to live in a way that reflects his holiness. But it's also about reaffirming God's commitment to them.
Yeah.
You know, his faithfulness to the promises that he made.
It's almost like they're entering this new phase of their relationship with God. Mm-hmm. They're leaving behind that wilderness, you know, a place of testing and uncertainty, and entering the promised land,
right.
A place of abundance and fulfillment. And that transition requires this kind of renewal of their commitment to the covenant.
That's a great way to put it. And the sense of transition is also reflected in this key theme that Dr. Hildebrandt talks about, the shift from space to place.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember him mentioning that. But I've got to admit, I'm a little fuzzy on what exactly he meant by space versus place.
Sure. He draws on the work of Walter Brueggemann, who makes this distinction that space represents chaos, the unknown, a state of being unmoored. You know, think of the wilderness, a place of wandering and uncertainty. Place, on the other hand, signifies stability, belonging, a sense of being rooted, you know, like the promised land.
Okay.
It represents a place where one can flourish and find purpose.
So the wilderness was like a temporary, necessary space, while the promised land represented this more permanent place where they could truly become God's people.
Exactly. And this idea of place isn't just about physical location.
Right.
It's about finding our place in God's story,
mm-hmm.
a place where we can live out our purpose and experience true belonging.
That's a really powerful image. It makes me think about those times in life when you just feel lost or uncertain, like you're wandering in a wilderness.
Yeah.
And then eventually finding your way back to a place of stability and purpose.
Right. It's a universal human experience.
Yeah.
And Deuteronomy reminds us that God is with us in both the spaces and the places of our lives.
It's fascinating how this ancient text speaks to these timeless human experiences. But one thing I still find kind of puzzling is this whole debate about who actually wrote Deuteronomy.
Right.
We talked about Dr. Hildebrandt's arguments for Mosaic authorship.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to hear a little bit more about the other side of the debate.
Of course. So critics who argue against Moses writing Deuteronomy often point to sections that seem to reflect a later time period. Like, for example, there's mention of kings in Israel, which didn't exist during Moses' lifetime.
Right. So they're looking at the historical context and like inconsistencies within the text itself to try and pinpoint when it was really written.
Exactly. They also point to specific literary styles and vocabulary that they believe are more characteristic of later Hebrew writing. It's almost like linguistic detective work.
Wow.
You know, using language as clues to try and figure out the authorship and the date.
That's really interesting. But if critics are saying that Deuteronomy reflects this later time period, how do they explain the treaty evidence that Dr. Hildebrandt presented, which seems to support an earlier date?
Right. That's where things get even more interesting. Critics who advocate for a later date might argue that the similarities between Deuteronomy and these ancient Hittite treaties could just be due to like a shared cultural background or literary tradition rather than direct authorship by Moses.
So they're not denying that this treaty form existed during Moses's time.
Right.
But they're suggesting that the author of Deuteronomy, whoever they believe it to be,
right,
was simply familiar with that style and used it to kind of frame their message.
Exactly. It's like how authors today might draw inspiration from different genres or literary styles to craft their work.
Right.
They're not directly copying, but borrowing elements and kind of adapting them to their own purposes.
That makes sense. It's a reminder that we need to consider multiple perspectives.
Yes.
And weigh the evidence really carefully when we're dealing with these ancient texts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it highlights the complexity of dealing with ancient texts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have all the answers.
Right.
And there's always room for interpretation and debate. But that's also part of what makes it so fascinating.
Yeah.
It's a constant process of discovery, analysis, and reevaluation.
I love how these deep dives challenge us to think critically, you know, and to engage with these different viewpoints. It's not about blindly accepting one side or the other, but about wrestling with the evidence and forming our own informed conclusions.
And that's such a valuable skill.
Yeah.
In any area of life, really.
Absolutely. The ability to engage with different perspectives, to think critically, and to be open to new information
is huge.
But I think it's especially important when it comes to faith.
Yeah.
You know, blind faith isn't really faith at all.
Right.
It's about engaging with the text, asking the tough questions, and ultimately coming to our own understanding of what it means for our lives.
Absolutely. It's about that personal journey of discovery. and the transformative power of encountering God's word.
And on that note, I think we've covered a lot of ground in this second part of our deep dive. We've explored the significance of the Promised Land, the concept of space versus place, and this ongoing debate about the authorship of Deuteronomy. But I'm really excited to bring all these threads together in our final segment and explore how Deuteronomy's message actually applies to our lives today. So let's take a short break and then come back to wrap up this fascinating deep dive. Well, we've journeyed through talking donkeys and prophetic oracles and scholarly debates and all that.
We have.
But now it's time to kind of bring it all home, you know?
Right.
How does this ancient book, Deuteronomy, speak to us today in the 21st century? What kind of wisdom can we take from this and apply to our own modern lives?
That's the real question, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not just about gaining all this knowledge, but it's about allowing these ancient stories and these teachings to actually transform the way we see the world and the way we live our lives.
Yeah, one of the most powerful themes we've talked about, I think, is this idea of obedience. Balaam's story, you know, with that talking donkey and those divine interventions, it really serves as like a cautionary tale.
It does.
He knew what was right, but he chose personal gain over listening to God.
And it cost him.
Yeah.
You know, and it reminds us that we face these choices all the time.
Yeah.
You know, some more tempting than others.
Mm-hmm.
But the allure of material rewards or social status or whatever it might be, that can be really powerful. But Deuteronomy keeps reminding us that true fulfillment comes from aligning ourselves with God's will, even if that means sacrifice.
Right.
Even if it means going against what we think we want.
Yeah. It makes me think about how often we might be tempted to take those shortcuts, you know,
right,
or compromise our values for convenience or personal gain.
Yeah.
Do you think those seemingly small choices can lead us down that slippery slope, just like Balaam?
I think they absolutely can.
Yeah.
And Deuteronomy really highlights those subtle ways that we can drift, you know, from our commitment to God. It's not always like this huge dramatic fall from grace. It can be this slow erosion of our values, you know, a gradual turning away from what we know deep down is true.
So it's about being vigilant, being aware of those small compromises that can kind of add up over time.
Exactly. And that's where I think this concept of covenant becomes so important.
Right.
Deuteronomy is all about renewing that agreement that God made with Israel.
Right.
Reminding them of their responsibilities and reaffirming God's unwavering commitment to them. It's like this sacred bond, you know, built on love and trust and mutual obligation.
Yeah. It's a really powerful image, this idea of covenant. But how do we actually translate that into our modern lives? I mean, it's easy to talk about covenant in the abstract, but what does that actually look like on a practical level?
Well, I think it starts with recognizing our own need for God, acknowledging that we can't do this thing called life on our own.
Right.
It's about cultivating a relationship with him.
Yeah.
Seeking his guidance, you know, when we're making decisions.
Mm.
And trusting his timing, even when things don't make sense.
That reminds me of those times in life when I just felt so lost.
Yeah.
Like I was wandering in a wilderness, just like the Israelites.
Right.
And it's often in those moments that I think we're most open to seeking God's direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Deuteronomy reminds us that those wilderness experiences, you know, those times of testing and uncertainty, they can actually be opportunities for growth.
Mm-hmm.
They can refine our faith and deepen our dependence on God.
But how do we hold on to that trust? You know, when things get really tough, when it seems like our prayers are going unanswered and our plans are falling apart.
That's the hard part, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Deuteronomy reminds us that we're not alone in those struggles.
Mm-hmm.
We have a God who loves us unconditionally, who is always with us, even in the darkest of times.
Right.
And we also have each other.
Yeah.
You know, we have this community of faith to support us and encourage us and remind us of God's faithfulness when we can't see it ourselves.
That sense of community is so vital.
It is. We're designed for connection, you know, for sharing our burdens and celebrating our victories together. And when you add faith into that mix, that community becomes even more essential.
Right.
Becomes the safe space, you know, where we can be vulnerable and ask the tough questions and encourage each other to keep going.
Absolutely. Well, as we wrap up this deep dive into Balaam and Deuteronomy, what's the one thing that you would want listeners to kind of take away from all of this? What's the message that resonates most deeply with you personally?
For me, it's this reminder that we are part of something much bigger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a story that began long before us and will continue long after we're gone. Deuteronomy calls us to remember our past,
right,
to be faithful in the present,
yeah,
and to live with this awareness that we're creating a legacy for the future.
Yeah.
It's about understanding our place in God's grand narrative and making choices that reflect His love and justice and mercy.
That's a really powerful thought to kind of carry with us. It's not just about our own individual journey, but it's about being part of something much bigger, something that transcends time and space. It's about being a light in the world and living out our faith in a way that impacts others and makes a difference.
I love that. And it's a journey we don't have to take alone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We have God to guide us.
Right.
We have our community to support us.
Absolutely.
And we have a purpose that's uniquely ours to fulfill.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been my pleasure.
We hope you've been challenged and inspired and equipped to live out your faith in a deeper and more meaningful way. And remember, even when you face those difficult choices, even when you feel lost and uncertain,
yeah,
you are not alone. God is with you, and He will never leave you or forsake you.